Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Go to ring.com/know-how and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second-generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping to the United States or Canada, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code KNOWHOW. Today on KNOWHOW,
it's a self-contained battery-powered Raspberry Pi Nook.
That's right, it's the LiPi. That was probably the worst Kamehameha we've ever done.
Yeah.
I know, man. Anyways, it's the show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be opening up your head like a can of tuna, pouring in all the good stuff. Not the tuna or the oil. That stuff's nasty. Mm. Patrick, so good to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back.
The last time you were here, you and your wife Svetlana were still 3D printing a babby.
Yes. Yeah, and the 3D printing... took a while to finish, but it's finally out of the printer, and he's doing real well.
By the way, the largest 3D baby printing I've ever seen. Yeah. How big was your baby?
9 pounds, 7.7 ounces.
And you have a tiny little wife.
And like 23 inches long.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is in the 99th percentile for size.
That doesn't actually go... They don't have something to measure that, because I think the measuring thing only goes up to like 20 inches.
Well... It barely fit. They had to use the tape measure. And then they did the footprint right after he was born, and the footprint was outside the box.
Oh, of course.
His feet were so large. Yeah. He's clearly my boy.
And I got to say, when you brought Caden in, everyone here was swooning. We just wanted to see the baby.
He's so cute.
The cutest baby ever.
There he is.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that. That's just, that face has attitude already.
Yep.
So you done good, Maker Dad.
He's grown up so fast already.
Well,
I look at the
kind of want that,
pictures,
right?
And he's 5 weeks old today. And
I just think about it. Just another year, and you'll be able to have a full night of sleep.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, we're not here to talk about your 3D printing job. We've got a project that we teased actually quite a long time ago. It's the LiPi. Now, the whole idea was to take a Raspberry Pi and to surround it with the stuff that you would need to make it portable, or the stuff that you would need to make it uninterruptible. We toyed with this idea since the start of KNOWHOW. Can you solar power a Raspberry Pi? Well, yes, but you need batteries. Can you use a Raspberry Pi as a server? Sure. Can you have a Raspberry Pi as a portable gaming system that you could use on the road? Yes, to all those things. So what we wanted to do was to create a project that could do all those things by being modular. And that's what we've got with the LiPi.
Yeah, this is. There's so many uses for this sort of thing. You could have it in a quadcopter. You could have it in a mouse droid. You could have it be on the laser tag field. All the projects we've done before come to this.
Exactly. Now, we do need to show you a couple of the things that have gone into the creation of the LiPi. We're going to go over the parts list in just a bit, but I want to start with the 3D design. And Alex, if you could just go to my computer. I want to show you some of the things that went into the creation of the LiPi. Now, as you can tell, this is the Raspberry Pi 3 case version 12. So, it's been cooking for a while. I kept changing this as the requirements for the projects kept changing. But ultimately, what we've come down to is a very modular system where you can alter the lid or the base or the switch holders to suit your application. Now, at its heart is this. This is sort of the cradle. This is where all the major electronics go. This thing that looks like little dips, that's actually where the batteries will be going to. We're going to be using 18650 batteries. Those are sort of standard cells in the hobbyist world. Now, this can take three, but if you really, really wanted to push, I've actually been able to put five of them in the bottom of the case. You just have to modify this area a tiny bit. By the way, this is not going to be like a standard know-how project where I give you the STL files, I'm going to give you the link to version 12 of this case, which means you can modify it according to your needs. Now, the cells will go down in this cradle, and then I have this area on the sides here that will be used to sort of hide the cables. I really wanted this to be nice, and that actually has a channel right here where it's not quite touching the wall, the cradle, and that will allow you to put your wiring harness so that you don't have to worry about getting pinched between the batteries and the case itself. Now, up top, this second level here, which will be divided off because I've actually got a case cover for the Raspi. It's this thing right here. This is the actual top of where the batteries go. If you go to the wide shot here, Alex, I'll show you them how it works. The batteries will go inside like so, and it's designed to hold them very snugly. But then you've got this piece, which also has a cradle, and this is going to go over the top, and it's going to hold them firmly. So no matter what happens, your batteries aren't going to be bouncing around inside of your case, which is kind of what you want, because remember, this is designed to last a while. This can sit on a shelf. This can sit in your car. This can be in a bag. I don't want especially the batteries to be jostling around the case, because, Patrick, when LiPi batteries short out, they tend to get very explodey.
Angry, yes.
Yeah, explodey. Angry, explodey. Same word, basically. All right, let's go back to the 3D design. Let me show you a couple of the other cues here. Now, the top is actually one of my favorite parts, because right now it's super simple. This is just something that goes over the top, so it holds everything in. It makes it a nice self-contained little nook, like the next unit of computing that they have for Intel processors type device. But I've been toying. I'm actually up to version 16 with different types of lids. So this one I've actually been designing will hold another 6 batteries in the top when I need extended life for my Raspberry Pi. But I could also have one that could, say, support a touchscreen, or one that has additional wireless adapters built into it so that I could use this as my Tor Pi node. Again, this is why I'm giving you the link to the project file so that you can go ahead and design it the way that you want. Now, past that, the original design for the LiPi was going to be everything in one case. The problem is that kind of made it very difficult for you to do any installation. You had to work under really tight spaces. So I took all the pieces that would be difficult to solder, and I gave them their own case. Now, this right here, this is going to hold what I would consider the nerve center of the LiPi. This little enclosure right here is what's going to allow you to power off of any power source or the internal batteries. And it's been designed to fit perfectly the charging circuit that I'm going to be showing you in our shopping list. Now, when this is done, and this is where the modularity comes into play, it's actually going to slide in right here. So this little slot, this little custom slot right here, when I'm done soldering together that component, it's just going to slide in. And then the lights on that board, because of these holes in the case, they'll shine through. So it saves me from having to make more indicator lights, because I've got lights coming off of the charging board. Now, on the other side, this is where it's really going to be flexible, because I have designed this one right now to just use this. So I've got a rocker switch that controls the on-off functions, and then I've got a button and a hole for lights. But I can change this any way I want. If you want to change the switches that you have, if you want to add an extra switch so that it does a particular function, or if you want to design this so that you can lock it off, you know, has a drop-down door so that you don't accidentally trigger, that's fine. Which, by the way, that brings me to this design cue. The reason why we have this in the first place is because the original version of the LiPi, the version 12 that I made, it actually had all the switches on the outside of the case. And the problem was if it was in a bag, you would trigger the switch.
Yeah, you bump the bag and the rocker switch goes, or the button.
Right, pressed. And the next thing you know is you've got no power because you've just run down the batteries, and that's a bad thing. So by recessing it, if you go to the wide shot again, by recessing this, it allows me to do all my installation in this little piece and then just slide it in. And then there's one lockdown piece, which I don't particularly like the design of. I'm probably going to change this in future versions. But it uses the little standoff that I've designed into that 3D print. And once you put the screw there, it just keeps this from coming out. So that, in a nutshell, is the LiPi design. Now, this This 3D design is completely available online. The links will be in the show notes. You don't have to copy anything down right now. But that's what we did for the design. Patrick, what do you think?
I think this is like the ultimate Raspberry Pi box. You've put everything that you need in here. And if anybody needs anything else, the files are there and it's easy to change.
Yeah, and also... And
expand the battery. I don't know what else you'd need in this.
By the way, I put a little cover for the SD card, and ours has the Twit logo on it. So
yes, I did notice that. Yeah. Nice touch.
It's kind of cute. But yeah, so I think in version 16, what I'm working on is I actually want to make this so that the connectors are pogo pins in the lid. So you don't even have to hook up a connector. It's just the action of putting on the lid and tightening it down actually makes the connections to additional batteries or features in here. By the way, I would highly suggest you play around with your filament colors, because putting this thing in all red, you know, it's kind of cool if you're a noob, but real 3D printing folk like to play with colors.
Yeah. I'm going to fix my printer again.
I know. Did I break your printer?
It was during your print.
Ah, dang it. I'm always breaking things. That's horrible. All right. So now that we've got the 3D printing out of the way, let's go ahead and show you the components that you're going to need. Alex, if you go to that first link, Raspberry Pi. Now, any Raspberry Pi will work with this. This case will actually even work with a Raspberry Pi 1. You might have to modify the lid because the port layout is slightly different, but anything Raspberry Pi 2 or 3 will fit in without any trouble. I would suggest if you're going to buy a new Raspberry Pi, just get the 3 because they're basically the same price. And the performance of the 3 is so much better than the 2 that it doesn't make sense to buy 2. Now, I gave you a Raspberry Pi 3 or a Raspberry Pi 2. I can't remember.
I think it was a 2.
Right. It was back when we were playing with Internet of Things.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the other nice thing about the Raspberry Pi 3 is all the built-in functionality, from the Wi-Fi to the Bluetooth, the speed of the processor. So this is definitely what I would suggest. That's going to be the bulk of the purchase, and that's going to cost you about $35, and the entire project is going to cost you about $50. The next thing on the list is you need a UBEC. Now, you've seen these before inside of our projects, because we like having a universal battery eliminating circuit. This will take any voltage between about 6 volts and 26 volts, and it will convert it down to 5. 5 volts is what we need. That's USB power, which is what the Raspberry Pi and even the Arduino is really designed to run on, which, by the way, that should tell you that you could also use this project for Arduinos. With that, it will allow me to use any adapter that you have, your laptop adapter, as long as it's got a 5.5 millimeter plug on it, a router adapter, basically all those adapters you've got standing around, no matter what voltage they are, because they're probably going to be above 5 and they're probably going to be below 26, should be able to power this project. That's not even a part that we've put into the price list. The second thing that you're going to need is the LiPo. Now, if you go to the link for this, these are the ones that I've chosen just because I'm cheap. These are 18650 cells. They're all the same size, but they're very different capacities. Now, this is a little bit tricky because a lot of these cells, I'd even say most, the vast majority of these cells don't actually have the capacity that they say they have. In fact, there are some here that will say, 4,500 milliamp hour. And when I've actually tested the ratings, it was closer to 1,200 milliamp hour. So it's not just a little bit off. It's grossly off. It's almost as if they just took inferior cells and then stamped a new number on them. Now, these are rated for, what are they rated for? 4,000 milliamp hour. So 4 amp hours. They're very close, but they were more expensive. So just figure that. Unfortunately, there's no real good rating system for them yet. It's kind of buyer beware. I would not go all in and buy a huge number of cells until you can verify that they actually perform the way that they say they're going to perform. Now, you've run into that before.
Yeah. Now, with these, have you found that they vary individually, or that, you know, this one is going to be pretty close to that one?
So for these mid-range ones, they're going to be pretty close. So if this is 4,000 milliamp hours, I clocked this at around 3,500 milliamp hours, which is actually not bad.
But this one would also clock around 3,500.
Correct.
There's not a big difference in the manufacturing.
But if you get those bargain basement deals, like 40 cells for $20, you can actually have variances within the same batch.
Yeah. That's,
and that actually gets dangerous. That's not just
annoying. That's what I'm concerned about here.
Right. Because if you're linking them together and they are vastly different capacities, you actually could have a fire hazard. So just know that. You might burn.
Maybe that's what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. The next thing that we're going to need is we are going to need a power jack. We need a way to get the power into the UBAC. And this is it. Now, you can get super cheap. They sell plastic 5.5 millimeter jacks for 35 cents. Don't do that. Get yourself a nice one. Not just because they look better, but because they're going to last longer.
I mean, splurge and spend a dollar.
Yeah. Add a dollar and you will be rewarded in the end. Now, after the power jack, we're also going to need a rocker switch. Unfortunately, you kind of have to buy these packs. And these are actually quite good. The UXL... This company has been around a long time. I have never had one of these rocker switches go bad. I actually bought 100-pack, and it drove the price down to something like 25 cents. So if you've got the cash, go ahead and get yourself a lot because you're going to use them. You also need a lithium-ion battery charger with protection. You have to skip down one link, Alex. This is kind of the heart of the project. This is what's going to allow me to take 5 volts from the UBAC. Because remember that UBAC is going to transfer anything from about 6 volts to 26 volts into 5 volts. And then push it into my batteries. Now, this also protects the batteries. It will not let my batteries run lower than about 30% of their capacity. Once it hits that, it will just cut off. That's good. Because you don't want to use that last 30%. We ran into this with the quadcopters.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Though if you run a LiPi battery down to zero, it's actually a fire hazard. That's when they puff up.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The chemistry gets damaged, so don't do that. This prevents you from doing that. But if you go back to that picture, Alex, you'll see that there's actually a series of pads. There's the in pad. There's the out pad. The out pad is what's going to supply power. But then those pads towards the top, the ones that say B+ and B-, that's where I connect the battery. So this will automatically switch between external power and internal power. That's what makes it an uninterruptible power supply. So I can pull the plug on this Raspberry and it won't even hiccup. It'll just keep going.
And there won't be a spike, power surge,
Nothing. Okay. Which I love. That's actually a really cool thing to do. You also are going to need a bunch of connectors. The first set are JST. You just need one male and one female. Of course, you're never going to find a place that sells just one male and one female. So go ahead and buy yourself a pack. And then you're going to need Wacara connectors. The reason why I have two separate sets of connectors is... it's going to sound stupid, but at some point you might accidentally plug a high voltage connector into a low voltage connector. And so this way I'm just making sure that you will never connect something like a 12 volt source to the 5 volt power of your Raspberry Pi, because that would be bad. So go ahead and get yourself a set of those and you'll be good to go. Now with that, that brings the total price of this project up to about $50, $35 of that is just the Raspberry Pi, and now we're good to go. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We're going to get into the actual assembly of this project in just a bit. But before we do that, Patrick, you know what I want to do?
What's that?
I want to talk about a sponsor of Know How.
Sounds good.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and do that. Now, this is a sponsor that's been around for a while, but more importantly for me, it's a sponsor that I actually purchased before they ever became a sponsor on the network. And of course... that's Ring. Now, you know the Ring video doorbell. We've been playing with it for a long time. It's one of the very first things that I bought for my parents' home in Las Vegas. And you understand that it gives you a wonderful capability, the ability to see who's coming to your door, who's coming to your porch. It's motion activated. It's high definition. It allows a talk back feature so you can both listen and speak to, say, a delivery man who might be trying to drop off a package from UPS or FedEx. Now, that's well and good, but Ring has expanded. They've really become the company that wants to protect your entire property, and it shows. Now, Know How is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, and the Ring Video Doorbell lets you see and speak to intruders on your smartphone from anywhere in the world. As long as you're connected, you're home. Now, check out Ring's Twitter feed. This thing is fantastic. I love it because it shows you examples of real-world videos. See, this... That's very typical. Someone will come to the door. They're actually scoping you out. They're seeing if there's anybody home. Because if somebody answers, that's not the home they're going to hit. Well, folks, with the Ring Video Doorbell, you can see them. It warns you that someone's coming up to your door. And you can speak to them as if you're still home. And, they just disappear. In fact, crooks are starting to figure out which houses have the Ring Video Doorbells. And they know that's not the one that they want to hit. I use it to protect my family. I think you're going to want to use it to protect yours too. Of course, it's not just the Ring Video Doorbell anymore. They've got the entire ring of security. It goes around your entire property. Now, just like Ring's Video Doorbell, their Floodlight Cam is a motion-activated camera and a floodlight that connects to your phone. Now, with high visibility floodlights, HD video, and two-way audio, it lets you know the moment anyone steps anywhere on your property, not just the front door. You can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. Now, that means that when things go bump in the night, you can bump back and immediately know what it is. Ring Floodlight Cams offer you the ultimate in home security. Thieves just can't hide with Ring. Front door, back door, porch, garage, wherever it might be, Ring's got you covered. You can monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security kit, which includes a Ring Video Doorbell and your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams based on, well, what you need for your property. And you can connect your Ring Video Doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit at ring.com/knowhow. That's ring.com/knowhow. $150 off when you go to ring.com/knowhow. And we thank Ring for their support of Knowhow. Okay, let's go ahead and bust out the components that we're going to need. If you go and go to my overhead, Alex, I'll be able to show them. Actually, go to the there we go. This is everything that we're going to need. So I need three of these 18650 cells, because that's how many are going to fit in my case. I'm going to need this UBEC. I've got my little 5.5 millimeter switch jack. I've got my rocker switch. I've also got a place to put in a momentary switch, although I haven't wired this one up yet just because I was lazy. But the big thing, the one that's actually probably going to take you the most time and trouble, is this. These are all the various connectors that I'm going to need when I put together my project. Now, there's an exact count in the notes, but essentially it means that I'm going to need one female Walkera connector for the Raspberry Pi. This is what's going to connect the Raspberry Pi to my battery system. One female JSD connector, about a 2-inch lead, to connect to the UBEC out. One male Walkera connector to connect to the other side of the UBEC. Then for my battery charging circuit, I'm going to need three of these, in, out, and out, connecting to the battery, connecting to the switch, and connecting to my power supply. And then I'm going to need a set for the rocker switch. Now, actually, if you go to that first slide, Alex, this shows you how the entire wiring schematic is actually going to work. So that's what it looks like without any connectors. I'm going to go from the jack to the UBEC to the charging circuit. Then the charging circuit will split. One set of leads will go to the batteries, and that's what both charges the batteries and receives power from the batteries when I go off of external power. And then that other set of wires that go all the way around, that's going to connect me to whatever needs power. In this particular case, it's my Raspberry Pi, and I have a rocker switch so I can interrupt the power to the Raspberry Pi when I want to have it shut off. But you'll notice, Patrick, I don't have the power switch on the jack because I still want to be able to charge the batteries even if the Raspberry Pi is off, right?
Yes.
Now, if you go to the next slide, this part could be kind of confusing, but this is where the connectors go. You could do this entire project without any connectors, but then it would be a pain because if you make any mistakes, you'd have to start over.
If you ever have to replace anything.
Precisely. Yeah. And we want to make this thing flexible. So please use the connectors. Again, it'll save you a couple of dollars if you don't, but it makes it so much easier to do this project if you do have it. I'm going to start connecting these together, but first I want to cover this little story, Patrick, because this is kind of amazing. One of the reasons why I'm doing this, I know a lot of people have reasons why they want to make a battery-powered Raspberry Pi, but I actually have a couple of these in my little data closet. Because there are certain functions that I do that I don't need a lot of power for. I just need something that consumes very little power, that generates very little heat, mm-hmm. but can fit into a small place. And that's actually why I'm creating this Nook. Do you have any applications for that?
Yeah, I want to put one of these in my mouse droid.
Yeah, exactly.
Have it control sounds and, you know, all sorts of things.
Very good.
And be a server.
Now, we are building an enclosure for a very low-powered computer, but what if you were building an enclosure or a data center for a bunch of these. This is actually something that's been asked to me, if we could make a Raspberry Pi cluster. And the answer is yes, you could, but it's completely outclassed by all the other clusters around the world. So yeah, why would you? That gets me to this very cool story that actually I saw first in The Verge about the Project Natick. Have you ever heard about
it? Yes, I have.
It? It's from Microsoft?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they came up with a very novel approach to solving a problem that they saw in the data center. And that is, we're increasingly packing more and more servers into a place. We're using up more and more power. In fact, in 2014, it was what, 100 billion kilowatt hours. That's about 2% of the total power usage of the United States were used in data center alone. And about 50% of that power doesn't actually go to powering the servers. It goes to
cooling it.
Yeah, because if you're going to put in X amount of power, that gets turned into heat. You need to get that heat away, otherwise bad things. Burn. We're back to burning.
Yeah.
Now, in a lot of places, you've got Google, Microsoft, Apple, all the leaders in data center, Facebook, they have solved this problem by moving their data centers to places that have a lot of water, so you could have, you know, water flow, or they've done things like put data centers in Greenland, where it's nice and cool, or, you know, next to a place that maybe has really good seasonal temperatures. That's a way for them to get back from spending so much of their power budget on cooling. But you read a little bit about Natick. What did Microsoft decide to do?
They're putting it underwater.
Yeah, yeah. which sounds ridiculous, but hear me out, folks. So Microsoft, this is actually phase two of the project. They've already done one to show the feasibility. They've created this container. It's 12.2 meters long. It's 2.8 meters in diameter. It's about the size of a shipping container. That's not a mistake. It means that it can be moved around on the back of a cargo truck. It's got 12 racks inside of it. That's 264 Microsoft data center servers with FPGA acceleration. And they put in 27.6 petabytes, not terabytes, petabytes of storage. Now, it's connected to land via a fiber trunk, but it is dropped into the ocean. It consumes about 240 kilowatt hours, 100% of which will be powered by onshore wind, solar, and tide/wave power generation. So they wanted to make this thing as green as possible. It's sealed with one atmosphere of nitrogen. So it's basically sea level. And then they're going to drop this into the water. It should give them 5 years of maintenance-free operation. But more importantly, it gives them what we would consider limitless cooling. Also, 90 days from start to finish. So they can create one of these in 90 days and have it shipped anywhere in the world. Why would you do this? Well, it reduces the latency. Half of the world's population lives within 200 kilometers of the ocean. Believe it or not, but light will move in a fiber network. So it's slowed down by latency of the equipment at about 200 kilometers a second, or a millisecond. Which means that if you have one of these dropped off, say, the coast of San Francisco, your ping time suddenly goes down to 2 milliseconds. It's round trip, right? So they've designed this so that you can have computing on the go. When you need more power, you just drop in another pod. I love this. I've been enamored by this project for a while. I had no idea they were this close to actually being done with it. But Patrick, it got me thinking. I mean, look at that. That's kind of cool the way that they do this. Yeah. You build a rack, put it into a sealed tub. Obviously they have to use high quality components because they want these things to last 5 years before you have to maintain them. Mm-hmm. But is there a better way to do it?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about this. They're using a one atmosphere nitrogen sealed environment.
Okay.
But what if, oh, this is just my booze brain going off again. What if it wasn't a nitrogen? What if it was a fluid? What if it was a cooling fluid? What if it was a cooling fluid that they could flood everything with? So it would have to be a dielectric fluid. It's non-electrically conductive, but very thermally conductive, that would essentially allow every component to have equal access to the outside of the hull of the pod, which is where the cooling takes place.
Would that be more effective for cooling than the nitrogen?
Way more cooling. Okay. I mean, anytime you have a gas is always going to be less conductive thermally than a liquid.
I have to think that they've thought of this.
They did. And what they probably thought was, it's not worth the mess because putting something into a fluid is difficult to service. But, I mean, these things are designed to be underwater for 5 years at a time.
Yeah.
And if you were to replace, the one thing would be the storage, because you couldn't use spinning storage.
I can't imagine they have spinning storage in there.
I don't know. 27 petabytes of flash storage. That's crazy expensive.
But also this project.
I know. It's Microsoft.
One of my concerns when I heard about this was, well, it's going to be putting out all this all this heat. Are you just warming the oceans and melting the ice caps? But
the answer
apparently,
is yes.
Well, it did say, I read, and it did say that it does not use any of the water for cooling. So it won't be putting out hot water.
No, it's entirely passive. So that's the whole idea. There's no circulation pumps. It's you drop this thing in the ocean, you give it power, you give it connection to the internet, and it just radiates heat from the hull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not using the water to cool, which is
even worse. Microsoft, I have a way for you to make this thing more expensive, but it would be really cool. Let's take a trip back to CES 2017 where I stopped by 3M, who maybe have phase 3 of Project Natick. Be you a system builder or an enterprise guru, there's one common enemy: heat. Heat is the thing that causes inefficiency. Heat is the thing that causes equipment to break, which is why I'm here with Philip from 3M, who has a novel idea for the next generation of data centers. Philip, what is this?
This is evaporative two-phase immersion cooling. So the server's been submerged in a dielectric coolant. It has a boiling temperature of about 55°C. Fluid's boiling on the heat generating components, the GPUs, CPUs. All the heat's gathered as a vapor stream that moves upward, condensing on a coil, transfers heat to facility water. Everything within the tank is passive.
Now, there are people who are passing by who are thinking, why are they putting bubbles through the bottom of this tank? Those aren't bubbles. Well, they are bubbles, but it's not an air supply. That's actually the liquid boiling as it comes into contact with those hot surfaces. And of course, thermodynamics tell us that that energy must come from somewhere, which means it's dumping all its waste heat directly into this NOVEC. Now, the cool thing about this, and this has been sort of the dream of anyone who's been building a high-density data center, is it allows you to precisely control where the heat goes. It doesn't go into the hot aisle. It doesn't go outside of the rack. It goes to where we want to go, which in this case is the condensing unit. How would I scale this? Because I love this idea, but what would I need to do to do this on a massive center? I'm talking about a data center the size of, say, the South Hall.
That's a very good question, and it's being done today. In fact, Bitfury, one of our customers, has deployed at the 40-megawatt scale in a Bitcoin mining facility in the Republic of Georgia. It houses about 6 million ASICs and 250-kilowatt tanks. And they run that facility with 48 to 52 degrees C facility water. So their annual energy consumption for cooling is approximately 1% of the IT overhead. And the facility was built in 6 months on what would be a shockingly low budget in the IT industry.
All right. Now let's get past the geek factor, because I love this kind of cooling. Immersive cooling has always been something it's a little bit of a geek squee. I mean, be you the guy who built his first system himself or someone who's designing a data center, anytime I can use a non-traditional way of cooling, which tends to be a very large chunk of my power usage, I'm happy. And yet, this is still pretty specialized because it's going to be a little bit more costly. Who do you see being the customer for NOVEC? Who's going to be designing something using this kind of evaporative cooling?
Well, we have to find those partners that have a sore point, right? They need the density that the technology can provide. They need the energy efficiency. Perhaps people who are constrained in real estate, floor space density, and energy for cooling. But before that can happen, we have to work with partners like Gigabyte here to densify the hardware, to reduce the fluid requirement to submerge the hardware. Before that, the cost of ownership model is not very attractive, but it quickly gets that way when you increase density.
All right, I'm going to have to ask you to look into your crystal ball, because I remember working with Floor Inert and Cray Computers, because you used to have to liquid cool those. Now we've got NOVEC. What comes next? What are the wizards at 3M working on in the lab that's just going to blow away those who are looking for a better way to cool their hot gear?
Well, our expertise, of course, is the chemistry, and we're always looking at better chemistries. Key factors are safety, environment, low global warming potential. The NOVEC trade name, the fluids that we use today, all of those products are intended to meet those goals. And we continue to think about the future. How do we meet the demands of HPC with their high communication frequencies? We need low dielectric constants. All these things are important.
Philip, thank you very much. You've made my CES. Now, if they wanted to find out more about NOVEC, if they wanted to find out more about 3M, if they wanted to find out more about the applications for this kind of technology, where should they go?
I would say go online and Google two-phase immersion cooling. You'll find a lot of information.
That's 3M. If you're looking for a way to cool down, maybe you just need to dunk it in some Novec. Now, 3M was nice enough to send me a gallon of Novec, which I think is actually ridiculously expensive.
A gallon.
A gallon. And the nice, because we've done liquid cooling before, but we did it with mineral oil, which is messy. It's horribly, horribly messy because it tends to wick. So if you've got any wires, you'll find like mineral oil on the outside of the tank because it's threaded its way up through the braid of the wire and ended up in your power. It won't short anything out. But I mean, just having oil on the floor, not super great. Not great. The Novec was awesome because you could dip a component in and then take it out and then it feels dry.
Oh, nice.
It's unfortunately, I didn't do a very good job of sealing the tank. I probably lost half a gallon just to evaporation, which means I also probably breathed in half a gallon of Novec. I'm pretty sure I wasn't supposed to do that.
Yeah.
That might explain all the drain bramage. Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and get back. Now, I do want to show you a couple of the components. I have quick soldered a couple of these things just to make it a bit easier. For example, all of the connectors, I've gone ahead and stripped and tinned. But you can read all of our step-by-step instructions. Essentially, you need either 2 or 4-inch leads. When you buy these things, they actually look more like this. They've got probably 6 to 8 inches of lead on them. So you're just going to have to clip them off to keep them nice and neat. You could use the original lengths, but then you end up shoving a bunch of cords into a box. Let's make it a little bit neater. Now, this is the first component that you're going to solder. If you go to the overhead, this is the power plug. So that's a 5.5 millimeter jack. What I've done is I've connected a male JST connector to this. Now, when you're soldering this, just remember, and this is also on the schematic, which you can download, the ground is the outside. The internal pin, that's your hot. That's your voltage. And remember, this voltage could be anywhere from 6 volts up to 26 volts. So that's why I'm using a JST connector. And that's also why the rest of the internals are all using Wacara connectors. Because I don't want to accidentally connect a 26-volt line to a 5-volt device. I will just blow the
metric smoke.
Yeah, metric smoke. It'll be nice blue smoke. So this is going to be your 5.5 millimeter plug. This will get any voltage in to this device. This is what comes up next. This is my UBEC. Now, my UBEC is going to have a JST female connector. And as we mentioned several times, this UBEC can take any voltage between 6 volts and 26 volts and turn it down into 5 volts. Now, on the other side, so I've got my input side here. On my output side, I've got a male Wacara connector. Why male? Because if you look at all of the little battery packs that we've used for our training quadcopters, the battery side is always male because I can't short this as easily, right? So this is going to be supplying power, 5-volt power, to the rest of the system. High voltage on this side, low voltage on that side. That's why I'm using two different types of connectors. I mean, you understand the logic behind that, Patrick, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to hook up a JST connector straight to the Raspberry Pi, it would be the shortest-lived Raspberry Pi in the history of Raspberry Pis. All right, so after that, I'm going to go ahead and go into my battery circuit. Now, because I've got a male connector coming out from the UBEC, what do I need on the input for the battery circuit?
Female.
I'm going to need a female. And if you go ahead and go to this, that's what I've got. I've got a female Wacara connector going into my little battery circuit. Now, remember, red is plus and black is minus. Now, you've seen this before, but let's go ahead and do it because it's always good practice. Whenever you're soldering, you're not going to want to heat up the solder. That's not what you're soldering. You are soldering the pad or the wire. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and heat up the pad, and I'm just going to flow the solder onto this. I'm going to start with the positive side. Here we go. Actually, let's clean off my tip a little bit. I'm going to tin it just a little bit just to make sure I'm at the right temperature and also to give it better heat conduction. You have to make sure when you're soldering this, don't hit any of the other components on the board. You just want that pad. If you accidentally desolder one of the ICs, this is basically done. Of course, these are not that expensive, and you're probably going to buy them at a 20 pack, so it'll be okay. There you go. Not too much because remember, I'm not using silicon wires here. I'm using plastic wires, and they don't work really well in their heat. They'll actually melt. So I've got my positive side there. Now let me go ahead and get my ground side. Okay.
Perfect.
Now, I'm not going to clip these yet because I'm going to go ahead and clip all the excess after I'm done. On the other side, now this is, again, this is the most difficult component that you're going to be soldering here. On the other side, I need both a male connector and a female connector. The male connector is the one that's going to go to the rocker switch to control power to the Raspberry Pi. The female connector is going to go to my batteries, right? Because I, just like with the quadcopter battery, the right. battery pack is going to be connected via a male connector. So let's go ahead and take care of that. I've got, where is that? Here's my female connector. So this is the one that's going to go to the battery out. And let's do it right here. And actually, I soldered the wrong pads.
Oh, no.
I had this backwards, but that's okay. And actually, luckily, it's the right one. It's okay for now. Yeah.
They both use the male.
Yeah, I can swap that around.
Right.
Now, when we're doing this, remember, these pads are really close to each other, the out pad and the battery pad. You don't want to bridge that. If you bridge that, you will short the battery pack. If you short the battery pack will smoke and possibly catch on fire. That's not good. Also, notice this actually has a USB connector. This is the way that it was designed to work. You put 5-volt USB into it, and it provides power out. I'm using the pads on the outside just because it's a little easier for me to do it that way. If I wanted to, I could actually make this so that you could charge the entire thing with a USB cable, but I didn't.
It'd be nice to have options.
It's nice to have options.
Somebody can modify it. You get the files.
Yeah, you've got the files. Don't be lazy. Go ahead and do your own. Whatevs. All right. And actually, you know how that works. So what I want to do is I want to show you what the finished one looks like. And the finished one looks like this. Now, notice I have all the wires coming out the bottom of the board. The reason why it's coming out at the bottom of the board is because that's how the 3D enclosure works. Let me go ahead and put this in the 3D enclosure. So I'm going to put the connectors. This was the little thing that was printed up through the slot. Like so. And in there. And then the top piece, super easy to tell which way it goes because that's the cutout for the USB connector. And it just held in by friction. And it's got two holes so that I can still see the LEDs in operation. Now, this is my power circuit. Now, the cool thing about this is really what makes this project possible. This little charging circuit will charge my batteries, will protect my batteries, make sure it doesn't go down below voltage, and it will automatically switch between external and internal voltage, which is what I want because it's uninterruptible, right?
Yeah, and it could easily be modified to have USB. Somebody
can
do that.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to go from this to the next stage, and the next stage is the batteries, and this is actually going to be a little bit tricky. I wanted to give this its own segment just because heat and batteries don't work well together, so there's a certain way we're going to solder our battery pack. But before we do that, Patrick, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank another sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, Wi-Fi, bad Wi-Fi specifically, is one of the biggest complaints that we get here at TWiT all the time. Our viewers, our listeners want to know the best way to make a better Wi-Fi device. Well, you don't have to because Eero already did it. Now, this episode of Know How is brought to you by Eero. Now, with Eero, you can install an enterprise-grade, and I really do mean enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes. You simply download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device, and it will walk you through each step of the process. It's quick, easy, and painless. You can easily create and share a guest network, know how many devices are connected at any given point. That's probably one of my favorite features, by the way. And check the internet speed that you're getting from your service provider. Now, Eero is protected with state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption. And what I love is the fact that they patched it. Remember when there was that little WPA2 scare? They immediately patched all of their devices. They pushed out new firmware, and they were protected automatically. And really, in this day and age, when we're always so concerned about security threats, That's what you want from your equipment manufacturer, someone who will stand behind their product. That's what Eero does. Of course, Eero also has the second generation Eero and Eero Beacon. If you go to my wide shot here, this is actually really, really cool. If you've ever wondered how you're going to expand functionality into your Wi-Fi system, this is it. Eero's home Wi-Fi system started in early 2016, and since then, they've learned from the hundreds of thousands of systems that they've sold, making them smarter, faster, and more reliable. This Eero Beacon allows a customer to build a Wi-Fi system that's more perfectly tailored to their home than ever before. Now, they offer more speed and range in the same high-quality, elegant design that people have come to expect. But with the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio, the second-generation Eero is now tri-band and twice as fast as its predecessor, which lets customers do more simultaneously in every room of their home. And with the addition of the new Thread radio, you may have heard of that if you've been playing with IoT or home automation, Eero can now connect to low-power devices such as locks, doorbells, other sensors, and more. Now, expanding your coverage in any room used to be a pain. You'd have to buy the right equipment, make sure it's wired up properly, and then deal with all the conflicts between the wireless systems. Not so with Eero. You simply plug it into a wall, take your beacon, and you're covered. You could add as many Eero beacons as you want, because if there's an outlet, there's Wi-Fi. Now, for free overnight shipping to the United States or Canada, visit Eero.com and at checkout, select overnight shipping. Then enter the code KNOWHOW to make it free. That's Eero, Eero.com, and enter the code KNOWHOW. And we thank Eero for the support of KNOWHOW. Okay, Patrick. So, batteries.
Yeah.
They don't like heat.
No,
they
not at
really,
all.
Really don't like heat. We've seen many examples over the years of what happens to these when they get too hot. Now, if you were a little afraid of doing this, the enclosure that I designed actually will fit store-bought battery holders that will cost you about $1.29 each. I decided not to do it that way because, well, what's the fun in that?
I was actually surprised you weren't doing that way and you were soldering directly to the battery.
Right. I mean, I could have done that. I could have taken, and I actually bought a set. They just didn't look right and they kind of rattled around a bit. And I didn't want to change the design so much that I'd have to like buy additional components just to make it work.
On the other hand, everything else is modular.
All right.
So
there we go. There we go. All right. Here's the trick. Most of these, if you can find them, if you can buy the 18650 battery with tab, you want with tab, then it makes it super easy to solder because the tab is a place that's ready to solder too. Unfortunately, those are very rare and they don't typically come in super high capacities, which is a problem. So you're probably going to have tabless batteries. That's what we're going to be dealing with. The first thing you need to do is to scuff up the surface. I know this sounds strange, but when you're soldering, it helps to have a little bit more surface area and it helps to have not something that's as smooth. So I've just taken some fine grit sandpaper here, just enough to take the shine off the top and the bottom of the cell. There we go. Oh, and by the way, the other reason why I've created it this way is because some people will want to buy the flat packs of the lithium polymer batteries, which, again, are the ones that we use in our quadcopter. And you can modify the case to fit that if that's what you want to do. So now that I've got this, and notice how you can kind of see there, Patrick. Actually, let me show that's what the original looks like. That's what the scuffed up one looks like. That's what you want, because that tells you that you're ready to solder. Now, the trick is I need to solder this, but I need to keep heat on this battery as a short time as possible. The longer that it's exposed to heat, the more potential there is for something catastrophic. And I actually just realized I don't have a good way for my helping hands to hold this because it's freaking
so
huge.
Yeah.
But so we're going to do it like this. Actually, if you go to the overhead, go to the front view. There we go. So I'm going to put this in cradle like this. I actually 3D printed a jig to hold these things, but of course I didn't bring it because that would be so simple. Now remember, tin the iron just a little bit. I just want a little bit on there. That's not the solder that's going to go onto the pad. That's just the solder that's going to help to transfer heat to the pad as quickly as possible. I want to heat up the pad immediately and then I want to be able to cool it down immediately. So I've got my iron set for 385. Normally it would be down near 350, 340. So what I'm going to do is this. I'm just going to tin the pad really quickly. There we go. Let up. Tin the pad.
Let it cool down a little bit.
Yeah, you really don't want this thing getting hot. That's the kind of surface I want. If you go back to the over the shoulder, that's the kind of surface I want. Just enough solder to show that it's actually sticking. And I'm going to go ahead and do both sides just to make sure I'm good to go. Now, someone asked me once, how do I know if I've used too much heat? Well, if the cell starts to expand or smoke, you've definitely used too much heat.
Bad.
Unfortunately, it gets bad before there. You've actually started breaking down the chemistry even before you get to that point. So, again, be very, very careful. Now, you could, if you were super, super cheap, and sometimes I am, you could actually just use the excess from the connectors that you're going to be snipping off. I wouldn't, because these, again, these are the components that are dangerous. I mean, not dangerous, but that can cause fires. So use a 20-gauge silicone wire. I bought a huge bundle of this a while back. I'm just going to solder one side. In fact, we're just going to solder the ground side. What this will allow me to do is it will give me a flexible way to connect to the battery where I'm not really worried about the thing flexing out and breaking. Oh, my gosh. What did I do here? I turned this into an absolute mess.
You're great with Christmas lights, aren't you?
I am really good with Christmas lights. I found that with Christmas lights, what you want to do is just keep pulling. that always works. All right. So you're going to strip off a little bit. Oh, if you are new at this, you just need to make enough to go from one cell to the next. If you want to be kind of pro, what you'll do is you'll do intermittent splices so that one wire has all of the exposed wire that you need to get there. So I'm going to go ahead and tin this. Is that in focus? There you go. You definitely want to tin it. And again, we're heating up the wire, not the solder. I'm just going to use a little to flow the heat in. And the reason why we're doing this is, A, to make sure that I've got a good connection. But B, because I've already put a little bit of solder onto the cell, I shouldn't have to add any more. I should basically just have to reflow the solder that's already there, and I'll be good to go. So let's see if it works. Go ahead and go to the wide view. I'm going to reheat the solder on the wire and on the cell by putting the wire on top of the blob that I've already created. This is going to be the ugliest solder I've ever made, by the way, folks. I'm just pre-warning you. And what will happen is it will heat up that solder, which is already stuck to the pad. And there you go. That's what I want. Now go ahead and go to the overhead. Again, super ugly. Yours better look nicer than mine because I'm doing mine on TV, but it's strong enough. Okay. Ultimately, when you do all three, you'll get something that looks like this. So this is three batteries, and again, I've used the same wire, so I just spliced open or stripped open the insulation so that it would match up. The way that I did that was I actually just put it into the jig, which is just the lid, because the lid has the same spacing. So I know how much I had to space these things out. But that gives me my three batteries connected via a male Walkera connector.
And by using one wire, you only have to solder that on once. You don't have to do one wire and then the other one going out.
Precisely, which is a pain, because what will happen is you'll melt the solder and then the first one will pop back out. So this does take a bit more time, but it looks a whole heck of a lot better and it's stronger because that actually is just one wire.
Yeah.
It's not a bunch of wire segments that have been soldered together, and therefore the strength of the pack is based on how well you soldered.
Right.
Okay. So now I've got this. I've got my charging, and I've got my UBAC and my power port. So I should be able to assemble this. Now, there's a little bit of charge in this battery. So if we did this right, Patrick, I should be able to assemble this entire thing and then power up the Raspberry.
All right.
Shall we give it a go?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so how about this? Why don't you take this, and you're going to install this into the housing, and I'm going to show them how the rest of this process works. So I'm going to start with this. This is my little 5.5 millimeter jack. I built this tight enough so that you actually, let's take this part out. So you have to screw it in. I toyed with the idea of making the mounting hole larger just so it would slide in, but it always ended up looking wrong. So just a little bit of kajiggery, and there you go.
Want me to put the button in too?
Yeah. Go ahead. You install that stuff. I'll install this. And then I've got a washer and a nut to lock it down on the other side. Remember, this is where the power will be coming in. So external power comes in through this jack. This is a little tricky because this corner is kind of hard, but I didn't want to make the case any larger than it already was. There we go. All I'm doing is I'm just tightening up this nut. Like so. And almost there. And there we go. All right. So that's my power connector. Thank you. Now, the next component I need in here is my UBEC, because I need to be able to take this voltage, which, again, between 6 and 26 volts, and convert it down to 5 volts. And I've already got a UBEC that I made specifically for that. So I'm going to take my JST connectors, male and female, plug them in. And they are polarized, so you can only get them in the proper way. This will take any voltage that's coming into my device, and it will turn it into 5 volts. So on the other side, I'm going to have this. This is my charging circuit. Let's go ahead and hook this up. This is my input right here. Ta-da! Now, with this, I can slide this into this slot. And this is really just friction held because it's a nice tug, smugs fit. Now, you should be able to see the LEDs through here. They're actually perfectly lined up when I apply power. So if I apply power, you'll get a red light. In an operation, you'll get a blue light. All right. So I now have two other connectors. One of these is going to go to the battery. The other one is going to go to the on-off switch. Now, I know the battery has a male connector, which means that is my battery out. Let's go ahead and put this in. Like so. Ta-da. And then this plugs in to that. Oh, it's on the other side. All right. And this is why I gave myself these little channels, because I can go ahead and hide some of the excess cable there. And that's why also why I have this area, because that's where the UBEC is going to go. That's also where the UBEC is going to go. So I have all this extra space here to hide those wires. Now, this could be a mess, except for the fact that I have this. So this is the deck that goes over the top. Make sure everything's in its proper space. And then I've just got a bunch of 3 millimeter screws. Let's put on two of them. This actually will take 4.
Now, if somebody doesn't have a 3D printer, they could still make this and make their own box. They could make it out of wood or...
Precisely, yeah. If you don't want... I mean, the 3D enclosure just makes it look kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the electronics, they will work whether or not they're in a 3D enclosure.
Yeah.
So this will now hold in all my batteries and my charging circuit. Now, I need this. So Patrick assembled this. All that this does, if you go back to that schematic, Alex, all that this does is it provides an interrupt path so that the Raspberry Pi isn't always on.
Did I put that together backwards?
No, that's fine. You got it. Oh, actually, yeah, you kind of did.
I messed that.
If you could put that together the right way, you're probably going to need this. So if I did this properly, I can actually hook up, and this is, again, pay attention to which way I ask you to put the connectors. I should be able to hook this up to this, and I should get a light on the Raspberry Pi because it should be supplying power. Let's find out. And there we go. So that little LED light there, that's the operation light for my Raspberry Pi. So right now, this is a good circuit. Unfortunately, if we ran it like this, it would never turn off. It would not turn off until the battery died. which is why we put the rocker switch. The rocker switch allows us to interrupt the power going to the Pi, but not the power going to the batteries. So you can still charge this thing even if the Raspberry Pi is not in operation. You're having trouble there, right?
It's going to be
a little vexing. That's, I understand. Fine. So a few of the challenge while Patrick puts that back together, a few of the challenges that I ran into this was originally, if you go to this part was a separate component because I wanted to be able to pull out the entire power subsystem. I decided against that. I just integrated everything into the tub just because it just added a layer of complexity. And this is really one of the things that you're going to run into if you become a 3D design maker, which is you have to balance complexity and elegance and good looks against just simpleness. Because the more simple you make this design, the easier it is going to be for people to actually assemble it. I've got mounting points here, here, and here. This is where my Raspi... There we go. That's where... Oh, actually, I had it. This is where my Raspi is going to go, like so. And I soldered a single female Wacara connector to the power lead. So if you look at, I'm not telling you which ones because it depends if it's a Raspberry Pi 1, 2, or 3. Look for a 5 volt and a ground pin, and it's just soldered to the bottom of that ground pin. And actually, if you have a hot glue gun, what I would suggest is after you've soldered this, just cover that over with hot glue. It just keeps it from wandering around. There we go. Thank you. And now I have an interrupt switch. So Patrick's assembled this. It allows me to do this. So I can connect that power switch, and then I can just slide this right in there.
And right now, the button does nothing. Snap. It's just there for looks.
It's just, yeah. The button's here for looks just because this is an open template. Originally, I was going to design this to be the graceful shutdown for Raspberry Pi, and I got lazy and I didn't do it. But this should now control power on and off to my Raspberry Pi. So let's go ahead and do the final installation here. Go to the front. There we go. So I'm going to connect my Raspberry Pi, and if it's in the off position, good, that light does not turn on. All right. Now let's put the Raspberry Pi into its housing, and let's go ahead and tie it down. Again, I'm using the same 3-millimeter screws that I've been using for the last year and a half are what I'm using on this project. I'm only holding down the Raspberry Pi on 3 points, but from my experience, that's more than enough. And actually, for this one, I'm just going to do for 2. All right. Now, if we assemble this correctly, if you go back to my overhead, when I flip this switch, I should see a green status light. And if the green status light is up, it means it's starting to boot. So let's flip it. There you go. So now it's operating entirely off of internal power. And I can actually, if I go ahead and I plug in a power source right now, it will both power and start to charge up the batteries. So let's go ahead and put the top on, because I think people deserve to see what the finished product is actually going to look like. A couple more, 4 more 3-millimeter screws. I didn't include the cover on the back just because, well, that's just a cover.
That's one with the Twit logo, right?
The one with the Twit logo. Because, you know, you want the Twit logo, right?
Yeah.
I played with a couple of different designs for this top. One of them has a recessed hole for the screws so that just kind of disappears. But I didn't like the design, so I went back to my bare basic. Now, it's designed to be held in by 4 screws, but again, I'm only going to use 2 for the brevity. But there you go. Patrick, this is the LiPi.
Very nice and clean.
Nice and clean. I like the two-tone. It still gives me access to all the ports, USB, Ethernet, HDMI. I can actually power this from this USB port. I can still power it, but just know it will not charge the batteries. Right. It will just turn on the Pi. Also, you don't want to have that and this powering the Pi at the same time. Bad things happen when you supply multiple power sources. And that's why we have the battery charging circuit, because it can take multiple power sources and make sure that only one is active at any given time. But all of the designs for this will be available at our show notes. And Patrick, where do they find those?
You can find that at twit.tv/KH.
Yeah, and if you go there, you'll also find all of our back episodes. And not just the show notes but also links for where you can buy the different components. And most importantly, and folks, I really do mean this, if you want know-how to continue, you need to subscribe. You need to get your friends to subscribe. Get an audio version, a video version, a high-definition video version delivered into your device of choice every single week. Again, just go to twit.tv/KH.
Definitely go for the video.
Yeah. This would be weird in audio. Actually, it was weird. Coding 101 had an inordinate number of audio-only downloads.
It was mostly video, but I don't know why. Yeah. You had to see the stuff on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, of course, we are a community. This is not just a show. We are makers. We are DIYers. We like knowing how things work. And one of the best places to find out what the Kitas are doing, those are our know-it-alls, is to go to our Google Plus group. Just go to Google Plus, look for know-how, ask to join. That's just a measure to keep out the spam accounts. And once you're in, you get access to almost 12,000 Kitas, people who are in every step of their maker DIY journey. It's a good way to ask questions, answer questions, post videos and photos of your projects like your mouse droid.
Yeah, and sharing ideas. And actually, I found somebody else that built a mouse droid in that group.
Yeah, so, actually a really nice mouse droid.
Yeah.
Oh, go figure.
I still got to paint mine.
Yeah. Of course, that's not the only place to find us. You can find us in our other socials. Twitter. I think Twitter is probably the biggest one. You're going to find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. If you follow me there, you'll find out what I'm doing when I'm not here at Twit. You'll find out the projects that I've been working on. Or actually right now, you're going to find out how difficult it is to pack up 6 years worth of lab gear into a little teeny tiny closet. Yeah. How about you, Patrick?
I'm at twitter.com/PDelahanty.
Of course, that's not, I mean, you do actually some awesome work with the anime convention community.
I try. Yeah. We've been doing a podcast for 10 years called AnimeCons TV. There's a handful of us, and we're almost at 1,000 subscribers on YouTube after 10 years.
Push them over the top, folks. Yeah. Push them over the top.
But yeah, we publish new episodes every Monday talking about cosplay, conventions. We do reports and anything. It's not just, we named it in the early days, so it's not just anime conventions anymore. There's comic conventions and everything. So
yeah. And we have one more member of our group. I like to call him Fred, but Fred Sunshine. We have Fred Sunshine. You can find Fred Sunshine on Twitter at twitter.com/ANEL3. I'm sorry, yes?
This is like my second to last know-how with you, and you still don't know my name?
Sunshine?
Maybe by the last one, you'll get it.
He's working on it.
We'll get
him some cue cards.
Takes me some time. I'm slow.
Okay.
In any case, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And now that you know how,
we'll do it.